Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Shinneman, president and founder of ReviewLess, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when they're interested in listening to it, which is whenever you download it to your iPad, iPod, or any device, and then hit play. Today, we have a real interesting show on the value of networking and e-discovery, which I'm thrilled to be doing with some exceptional speakers who are some of the best networkers I know. Two of them are first-time panelists on ESI Bytes, and they're long overdue guests. For the past several years, I've been hosting a group of lawyers and judges in Pittsburgh in quarterly meetings we call Friends of eDiscovery, and it's been very successful in our local community in Pittsburgh to bring together the attorneys who have the most experience in the field with those who are tasked at their organizations with working in or working with eDiscovery. And while I think this meeting format enables a community to establish local approaches to handle gray issues in eDiscovery consistently, the value also appears to go deeper than this as attendees form relationships with each other, as eDiscovery practitioners to bounce ideas off of and to help answer their questions. There are many other examples of networking groups within the field. Probably the best known are the Sedona Conference and EDRM, which produce wonderful white papers from industry thought leaders. The goal of this show, though, is to go deeper into the roots of local communities and talk about sustainable networking groups, which allow neighbors and peers to meet frequently to talk about practical issues and knowledge sharing without the burden of having to create position papers. Today we have participants from Friends of eDiscovery, Women in eDiscovery, and BeDiscovery to talk about the value they've seen from their various groups, and hopefully we'll see some common themes emerge which motivate practitioners to participate in these types of groups later this year and to help more people to become better eDiscovery practitioners. Our panel today, we have the Honorable Judge Conte from the Western District of Pennsylvania. Judge Conte, along with Judge Fisher, has assisted me in Pittsburgh with the Friends of eDiscovery group. She's practiced at Buchanan Ingersoll as a partner and Kirkpatrick Lockhart. She's been a frequent author, well-written in the field, and importantly, in addition to being a 100th judge in the country to sign the Sedona Conference Cooperation Proclamation, she has been instrumental in setting up the Western District of Pennsylvania's model program of using special masters to assist the parties in the court in resolving e-discovery disputes. So thrilled to have you back on the show, Judge Conte. New time participant, Allison Brechter, is the Director of Information Management and Strategy and Senior Litigation Counsel at Marsh & McClenahan Companies. And for today's podcast, she's been involved with the e-discovery networking group Women in eDiscovery, but she participates in a whole bunch of other networking-type groups, including being on the advisory board for the Georgetown eDiscovery Institute. One of the other interesting things, in addition to the work she does at Marsh & McClenahan, is she authored a book on eDiscovery, Plain and Simple, a plain English crash course in eDiscovery for charity, which she talked about at Georgetown a few years ago, and I still remember that vividly. It was such a very interesting way to take this field and try to help create, you know, charitable, you know, impact other than the pain that eDiscovery typically causes. Another first-time guest, Dan Regard, is a nationally recognized eDiscovery expert, over 20 years of experience in the field. He's the CEO and Managing Director of Intelligent Discovery Solutions. Was instrumental. Dan, did you start the Masters Conference, or you can speak in at this point, Dan, because the Masters Conference is so well recognized. Was this something you created?
I did not create it, but I've been fortunate enough to be involved with it since the beginning. I worked as the served as the keynote speaker for the first 2 years, and then have since I don't know if it's been elevated or demoted. You can choose your word there. Now I help organize a lot of the events behind the scenes and help put out the educational content with the assistance of a lot of other people, a cast of thousands, literally. In fact, Pete Pepitone, who's on the call with us today, really helped do a lot of the organization last year.
Yeah, and Dan is all over the place, you know, one of the most recognized people and names and personalities in eDiscovery, and he also started the Bee Discovery Group, which is an interesting networking group in a number of cities. Dan started to introduce Pete Pepitone as the last panelist. He's the eDiscovery director at the large Cincinnati-based law firm Dinsmore & Shohl. He's also worked in-house at Mimecast and with Computer Associates. And Pete, you know, is both a technologist and also involved with the Sedona Conference. He's very active online, and he started Friends of eDiscovery as a group with Tom Allman, and runs the group in Cincinnati. He goes up to Columbus and got me involved with Friends of eDiscovery, which we launched in Pittsburgh. So I think it's a good group. Real happy to have everyone on here. So since we have some new guests on the show, let's first start by asking how you each got started in eDiscovery, and we'll start with Judge Consey, and then Allison, Dan, and Pete.
Well, it was baptism by fire, so to speak. I had a very large discovery dispute, and it was complicated and complex, and I had to try to find the right special master to look into the issues that were involved in the dispute, and it had to do with preservation, failure to preserve, trying to reconstruct the electronic data that had been deleted or stored. So it was a very complicated thing, and it really got me thinking about these issues and trying to deal with them in a practical way.
Great. And Allison, yourself?
Well, I guess the same trial by fire. In October 2004, as anyone who follows the insurance industry would know, my company was involved in an investigation from the New York Attorney General's office, which required the production of more than 100 hard drives, millions of pages of documents, all within I think 3 or 4 day time period. Having successfully navigated that very difficult, crisis mode, to say the least, when your stock drops 50% overnight, having come out of that, our general counsel appointed me to handle and coordinate all electronic discovery for our operating companies globally. It's quite a challenge. We do business in more than 100 different countries, and we have more than 50,000 employees. And challenge, as you can imagine, in the this was years before the e-discovery rules were promulgated, and at that time, there really were no rules other than DubLake. So networking was a critical component of survival, really, at that time, and in some respects still is today.
Okay, and how about yourself, Dan? I'm very interested to hear this. Hello, Dan.
Sorry about that. I got into eDiscovery by accident, purely. I was involved as a programmer way back in the mid-90s, working with video definition companies. And I'm sorry, Carl, I'm getting a lot of feedback on the line right now.
Yeah, I'm hearing it a little bit, too. Not much
that's,
I can
that,
do.
That's a lot better, though.
Okay.
So I was doing a lot of programming for video deposition and digital depositions back in the mid-90s while I was in law school at Tulane. And upon graduation, I made the decision to stay in litigation technology rather than go into the full-time practice of law, and I've been enjoying it ever since.
Okay. And Pete, how about yourself?
I suppose a little more accidental as well. I was working for the Plaintiffs Steering Committee on the breast implant litigation, the large MDL, which was centered here document-wise in Cincinnati. And that was in the mid-90s as well. We had a lot of old historical information that had been generated and produced in paper form, and then this new kind of information that people had sort of dealt with, but not really in the litigation context, at least none of us had, and that was the electronic information. So we had to learn how to deal with it at that point.
Okay, great. And what I like about this group is that every, you know, we've got a judge, we've got an in-house person, outside lawyer, vendor. So you each have a different perspective on what you get out of your networking group. So if we follow sort of the same order, why don't you tell me a little bit about your networking group and anything else you want to talk about in terms of finding out information or, you know, what's special about it. Judge Conte, if you want to start.
Well, our local Friends of eDiscovery group, it got started, I guess, a couple of years ago, and it is a kind of get-together that it's very informal. We sit around. There's sometimes a fairly scripted issues, depending on who is organizing that particular meeting. And it's a really wonderful opportunity for lawyers, the judges, the technicians, because we sometimes have technical people that will come as well, to see what is actually going on in the field, what the problems are, do they have any creative solutions. Sometimes we just commiserate with each other in terms of certain problems that crop up from time to time. But for me as a judge, it's a very good way to ask practical questions that I sometimes come across and don't really have a resource to go to. And it helps me connect with our local bar in terms of the people that are actually engaged in this kind of work, even behind the scenes, the ones that may not come to court. And so it, for me, is both educational and it's a connectional way for me to become more familiar with our local practitioners.
Great. And how about yourself, Allison?
Well, early on when I started handling e-discovery and being the one at my company who's ultimately accountable for any lapses, as you can imagine, networking was so important for us, especially early on when we had questions like, how do you even form an e-discovery team, for example? So at that stage, and still to this day, there's a lot of networking groups that are just like my counterparts at other companies, in-house counsel, at large companies, small companies. There's a group called the Corporate eDiscovery Forum, which is fantastic. So for anyone who's an in-house counsel, it's a great group to go to because it is not open to any vendors. It's not open to outside counsel. And you learn more in an hour sitting next to your counterpart at, you know, some other company than you can oftentimes in several months on the job. So there's that networking group. There's also another networking group that I belong to called Women in eDiscovery, which, as the name suggests, is women in the electronic discovery area, which is not just attorneys. It's paralegals, information technology colleagues, litigation support professionals, in-house and outside counsel. So it really brings together different worlds, much like we have on this call. As far as how they operate, it's free to join. Maybe there's a nominal annual fee. I'm not really sure. But it's also very informal. They hold lunch and learns usually. There's 20 different chapters, if my recollection is correct, all across the country. And if you go on to womenineediscovery.com, all one word, you can find the contact for your local chapter. So those are really the two groups that I would highly recommend. And then there's some in-house counsel at some law firms, some corporations, particularly in the pharmaceutical area, who have sort of started their own ad hoc networking groups as well. And I think, generally speaking, having been in this industry for at least 7 years at this point, focusing on e-discovery and speaking at some of the larger conferences, I can say with some confidence, and I think Dan would agree with me, that the attorneys in this group we're all so approachable. I mean, I think that everybody is sort of navigating from a similar standpoint in that we're lawyers. We didn't learn computer science in law school. I didn't take a computer science class in college. And in order to effectively practice e-discovery, you really have to understand IT. And so what better way to ask those kinds of questions around email archiving and hard drives and forensic imaging and things like that than at a networking group.
Yeah, especially since no one knows everything. That's everyone's nervous because you know what you don't know well. But when you pull it together, you know you can attack those weaknesses. How about yourself, Dan? Tell me about Bee Discovery and what that's about and how you started that.
Well, Bee Discovery really came out of a desire just to orient myself in Washington, D.C., which was a new town for me at the time in 2003, 2004. Ironically enough, I gravitated to two other fellow expatriates, and I say expatriates because I had moved here from Louisiana, and those two people were Spencer Cosper, who's still very active involved in investigations over at Deloitte & Touche, and Pete Pepitone, our co-speaker today. Now, what I didn't really realize until Pete's own introduction earlier is that we have another point of intersection. When Pete was working on the breast implant litigation, that is exactly the litigation I was doing the video depositions for. So I was hiding somewhere else in the world, Pete, handling 6,000 days of video deposition for breast implant while you were handling the documents in the e-discovery.
I was a summer associate at a law firm writing a memo on the breast plant litigation, and I ended up not working at that firm. I don't know if it had anything to do with the memo I wrote. But
anyway. Unfortunately, it looks like we may all be tapped on the shoulder to get back into action to help France sort everything out. But that's another chapter. Coming to D.C., I really wanted to get a group together that could learn about D.C. and also share some experiences and build some collegiality. We came across the name Bee Discovery as a chance to go literally to different bars once a month. And so it's the Bar Discovery Group. And the beauty of it is, we now have 15 or so chapters across the United States. There is no process to apply for membership. There's no annual fee currently. The bars are all cash bar. It's really a professional networking hour that's organized once a month strictly by volunteers, which makes it really, really wonderful and embracing of new people. And if you get onto the schedules, it gives you a chance, as many of us travel around the United States anyway, to coordinate those travels with a way to meet other people from our community where you know they're going to be, and you know that they're going to be there in order specifically to meet other people. So it really builds collegiality, it builds opportunities, and I've seen great things come out of it. Most importantly, you know, with new markets like electronic discovery, everyone is trying to figure out what is their role, what is their career, what is their company doing. Things like Bee Discovery and Women in E-Discovery and these other groups have built familiarity that have led to what I call positive marketing rather than negative marketing. It's very hard to talk badly about somebody that you're going to see every month and that you're going to sit down and have a drink with. And I see more competition on merits rather than on negative marketing, and that's been a real positive outcome.
That's an interesting idea. Judge Conte, I think we're going to meet in a bar for our next meeting.
Oh, dear, no. I don't think that would be good from the judicial point of view.
Well, Pete, tell us a little bit about the formation of Friends of eDiscovery and, you know, what you guys do in Cincinnati.
So I had been asked, I was at CA at the time, and I had been asked by CA to create communities of interest, sort of like what Dan has and what Allison have. We couldn't really find the right format for it, and it was a chance conversation at one of the Sedona meetings with Tom Allman, who lives in Cincinnati, and we lamented that there was nothing going on in Cincinnati where I'd lived before Washington D.C. and which hadn't really been doing a lot in Discovery Land. So we decided to put together a group that was based on the corporate attendees who formed some of Allison's group, as well as the law firms who might be on one side or another of a case, and really to focus on the corporate concerns for how is the end litigant going to manage large volumes of information. It wasn't law firm driven; it was more end litigant driven, and how someone else who sits in my chair might be able to help me or handle some of the issues that I come up with. And it's turned into a very vibrant group. We've got groups in several cities, and we're looking to set up several more in the next year. A couple of the things that have been really really positive coming out of it are, one, we've developed a real sense of community in every town where we have a Friends of eDiscovery so far. We note comings and goings, who's changing jobs, who's having life changes, births, marriages, etc. We've been able to do some really interesting polling of the group and sort of create a local standard of care for here's kind of how everybody's dealing with a certain issue, or here's how people are approaching self-collection. Here's how people are approaching preservation. There was a substantial case that came out a couple of years ago that seemed to create a whole new set of obligations for in litigants in the preservation arena. And we went around the room and to an attendant, they said, well, here's how we deal with it. And they all had similar approaches. And we sort of thought that maybe we're creating a defensible mechanism or the awareness of a defensible mechanism by divining out of the air what the local standard of care happens to be. And I think one of the most interesting things that's come out of it is a couple of the attendees got together and decided they ought to be teaching a class in e-discovery at the local law school here. So we have that going on now. A lot of interesting stuff coming out of the groups.
Oh, that's great.
This is Judge Conte. I just wanted to say, too, that the Friends of e-Discovery in Pittsburgh is a free group to join. There's no cost involved. We switch around the venues from the firms. We hosted one at the court. Whoever the host is will probably provide a very modest breakfast in terms of bagels, rolls, coffee, juice, that type of thing, so that we meet early in the morning. We have some time for personal exchanges, and then we get into our meetings, and they generally last about an hour. And it's, as I said, it's a very good situation because there's no cost to it. It gives people an opportunity to come together informally at least four times a year to talk about these very important matters.
Yeah, and then the next thing, I want to go a little bit deeper in terms of the value proposition and see where this goes. Is, you know, was there ever a moment, I think Pete sort of alluded to the one on his situation, where there was like, oh, my God, this was really helpful observation. And I'll sort of kick it off. There was the one that we hosted at the courthouse in Pittsburgh that Judge Conte hosted. We were talking about pension committee, and we were talking about the pain of starting a collection. And we had roughly a split room, half in-house, half outside counsel. And I asked the people outside, or, you know, the outside law firms, how many of you people feel very uncomfortable when you have to tell your client what they're going to have to do to get their arms around the data, and how much pushback you think you're going to get? And they all raised their hand. And then I asked the people that were at companies, how many of you people feel like the minute the law firm starts talking about collection, oh, my God, the bills are adding up, and I don't know how we're going to do all this, and everyone raised their hand. And it just became immediately clear to me there's a huge communication issue right at the beginning of the case on the same side of the team, because it was unanimous on both sides. And unless you have that type of group together, and by the way, everything we do is confidential, the attendees, you know, no one, anything specifically said by people we don't reveal, but it's useful. So that was sort of my aha moment, like, wow, this is really working.
And it's Allison. You know, one other thing from the perspective of an in-house counsel, aside from a communication issue around the legal fees and the cost involved, there's oftentimes a miscommunication or no communication at all around the expectations. You know, sometimes our outside counsel feels that it's in-house counsel's job to issue the legal hold, issue reminders, do the collection in-house, that sort of thing. And maybe for some companies that is the case. But unless there's unless that issue comes on the checklist of things to talk about, it oftentimes doesn't even get discussed at all and could therefore slip through the cracks.
Okay. Does anyone else have sort of an aha moment that they were like, whoa, this is really useful? You know, keeping it general, of course.
Well, from speaking from someone from a large company, I think I can say that we're probably representative of this, that more and more companies are trying to bring the process in-house. rather than outsourcing to outside counsel. And so because of that, I think more companies are willing to make an investment in technology to help them do that. We designed, just as an example of an aha moment that came out of a networking experience, we at our company designed our own customized legal hold tracking tool that we've been using for several years now. And I did a presentation at one of the networking groups, the Corporate eDiscovery Forum. We have quarterly meetings. Like I said, it's just in-house counsel. And we talked about our solution, which we developed on our own through a fairly nominal cost, and have, you know, if I had a dollar for every demonstration or request for a demonstration that I've had, you know, you get the idea. I think more companies are starting to think about this, are starting to form their own e-discovery teams where legal partners with IT. And so the real value that I could see in networking as well is asking attorneys at other companies, what kind of technology do you use for email collection, data preservation, sort of thing?
Okay.
This is Judge Conte. At one of our quarterly meetings for the Friends of eDiscovery, the topic had to do with new technologies that are coming up, new ways to do these searches, and it was the first time I ever heard the words predictive coding and the use of artificial intelligence in the electronic discovery world. And to me, that was really an eye-opener to think there's something else out there besides keyword searching. And as I left that meeting, I felt I wanted to learn more about it. I had an opportunity to do another program with some of the individuals who designed the programs to do the predictive coding, and then I had an example shown to me of how it works, and now we're having a presentation on that to all of the judges in the Western District of Pennsylvania so that they can be aware of some of the new developments and things that may be coming down the road. And to me, that was very valuable.
And actually, since I was involved in giving that presentation, the thing, the aha moment for me in using that was the ability to tie it into the special master program.
Yes.
To say, could you overcome some of the defensibility concerns that everyone seems to have by, you know, bringing in a technologist in the middle? And I think in the discussion, it was a very interesting discussion.
Right, because what the special master will do is make a report and recommendation to the court about what is the best system, most cost-effective system to use to conduct the search, and then the court will order that. And so you'll have the blessing of a court order for how the search is to be conducted.
Okay. So I don't know if there are any other examples.
Well, I can certainly give you an aha moment. It didn't happen at a B-Discovery meeting, but it did happen at a networking event where I was at actually a commemorative dinner for Richard Brannan, who started the Sedona Conference this year in Washington, D.C., is where they held the dinner. And it was to hear from the judges who were in attendance who spoke out that these types of informal networking groups, and Judge Conte, I'd like to have your feedback on this, obviously, is that it gave the judges a real chance to talk to practitioners outside of the context of a particular litigation and step out of the barrier between the bench and the bar and engage in some really great conversations, because the judges had some honest questions that they wanted to discuss, not in the context of a court record. And it gave, I've seen practitioners mingle where they are litigating in front of the judge they're talking with, but there's a plaintiff, there's a defendant, and there's a government investigator, and they're all having a great conversation on truly engaging issues, but they're not antagonistic at the time. And I don't know if you've seen that, Your Honor.
I do see that all the time at these meetings.
Right. Dan, one of the other questions that I sort of had is about the mix of people that attend the meetings when you're in these situations. Do you see mix sometimes being helpful or you know, because vendors have different perspectives, defendants and plaintiffs have different needs and concerns, and sometimes it's hard to get open dialogue between strangers or adversaries, although I suppose if you have a little bit of alcohol involved. And actually, if anyone in Yenna has a view on that, I know, Pete, I think you've probably got some observations.
My perspective on this, and then I'll yield to the other panelists, is that certainly a little social lubrication doesn't hurt, but what really makes a difference in the way individuals behave is, one, the rules of the road for that particular group. I know Pete went over some of his rules and Judge Conte did. With B-Discovery, it's open to everybody. We don't really have any rules, so maybe people are a little bit more guarded because there's no official umbrella of silence. But the attitude that we bring is that it's not going to be overly commercialized. We purposely had other people run these chapters from what I would say are competitors to me in a traditional sense of the word, but really great networkers, people who network because they have a passion for it and they want to bring people together and create new energy. And we downplay the commercialism. So we don't sell the lists. We don't heavily promote, although we do have guest hosts each month. It's they get a token nod of the head and a thank you. But it's not a big marketing ploy for them. It's really just a networking group. And the second thing I think that's important is when individuals' behaviors change. And I usually see that happen when an individual changes companies. And when a person changes companies, it's like a light bulb goes off and they say, oh, this is why we network. I understand why it's important now. And from that point forward, you have an active participant, whereas they might have been passive prior to that. And it's just because networking isn't one of those skills they teach us in college. It's not one of the ones you learn in high school if you're from anywhere else, from Louisiana, perhaps. But it's nice to see it click into place.
And Pete, do you have any thoughts on the mix of people?
I think different kinds of mixes are helpful in lots of different scenarios. Dan's is very open. Allison has mentioned the CEDF, which is very closed. And I think each one of them has a place. And as long as you know, going back to Dan's rules of the road, then I think you're able to get value out of all of those different kinds of mixes that are available to you.
Yeah, and I think it also has to do with the confidence that participants have in the meeting organizer. You know, one big turnoff for me personally was one time I came out of a networking meeting and literally like 2 weeks later, there was a litigation matter and interrogatories that were submitted by someone who was at the meeting and asked for, you know, some particular policy that I had quoted or referred to at the networking meeting. You know, that's really unfair. It's completely unprofessional, slightly cheesy. And, you know, I never went back. So I think you have to have confidence and understand, like Pete was saying, what are the rules of the road, and just get an understanding and a comfort level of what all the participants are there to do and accomplish from the meeting.
So, you know, the next question I want to ask is sort of one I'm not sure about, but Pete, I dub you sort of the expert on this from looking at everyone's bios on LinkedIn. You have more online groups that you're a member of than all of us combined, so you're probably the best one to start the conversation. But are there any good experiences you've been seeing with online networking thus far, you know, LinkedIn, tweeting, blogging, sharing comments?
I wrestle with that. When I first saw the preview of the question, I thought you were labeling me a king networker on this group. And certainly, I like to do it, but you know, no one's going to be on the same call with Dan and Allison and say that you're a king networker. So I was a little nervous at first, but the way that you phrased the question makes me understand a little better. And I don't really know about the value of online networking. It's nice to have some groups that, you know, you see a new one pop up and you're like, oh, well, maybe there's an interesting discussion thread going on in that e-discovery group because it's got a dash and a capital letter versus the other one that I am a member of that doesn't have a dash and doesn't have a capital letter. Personally, I sort of find that most of the discussion threads in most of the groups are similar, if not exactly the same. Maybe you see the exact same person starting the same thread in 12 different groups in a given week. If there's some secret sauce or maybe even some not-so-secret sauce to getting better value out of the online kind of networking, I'd love to hear it.
Well, maybe one value could be that it could be a little bit intimidating to go into a room of people you don't know. Networking, just for any reason, could be intimidating for people whose, you know, personality is a little bit more introverted or maybe they don't have time. So I like online networking simply for the idea of meeting someone that I can then say, oh, you're going to that lunch at so-and-so. Okay, see you there. You know, that kind of thing. So that it sort of takes the pressure off of, you know, when you go to a meeting that you're not going to go in there cold knowing nobody.
Yeah, I think you've hit one of the biggest problems I found with the online stuff is you just never, once you've posted, it's there. We all know that from eDiscovery. It's out there. And, you know, you may regret what you posted before. And, plus you don't know who's reading it. The other observations that I've encountered, and I've posted a couple things in people's groups, is typically you'll have, I call it the alpha dog person that's posting and posting and posting and dominating the space. And, people that are, you don't know if they're just reading and listening and looking for free information. It's that trust issue that's hard to get your arms around. But I personally will post stuff that's consistent with things that I believe in that I think is helpful. But you always think twice before. You read twice and then you hit send. And then I've had reactions to some of the things I've posted and I've been like, no, that's not what I meant at all. Then you get into an online back and forth and I don't know how helpful that is. So there's some risks with it, but it's a source of information. It's a good way to get stuff out there to help, you know, get people thinking.
You're not going to find many judges that will be able to do that type of networking just because of the vulnerability of the judiciary in that type of context. So it's not the kind of forum that a judge, that many judges would be willing to participate in. That's why I value the person-to-person meetings and opportunities to get together. I find that to be very helpful, whereas these networking type of sites is not something that I, as a judge, would feel comfortable becoming involved with.
That's a good point. One of the other things that I've sort of struggled with, and we were going to talk in a couple of weeks about this for the coming year, Judge Conte with Judge Fisher in Pittsburgh, is it better to create more eDiscovery lawyers and try to bring more and more people into the fold? Or is it better in networking just to focus on the dominant participants and train them to take a lot of that information back to their organizations? Because you got to have a love of technology, I think, to really jump into this.
I think what you need to do is that you need to have enough sensitivity in the overall legal community that people know there's a problem. And you have to get the problem solved. Are the ones
Yeah, unfortunately, that was a wall of sound, a lot of feedback there. I'll ask you the question, Allison, to see if you have a reaction to it, and maybe you'll hit some of the points that Judge Conte just hit.
Okay, I'll try my best.
This will be a game show, and you can say, I agree or disagree, Judge Conte.
better than the other way around.
Yeah.
Well, in my world, Carl, you know, really every case is an e-discovery case, from the smallest, you know, single plaintiff employment matter to the largest complex commercial litigation. And so what I mean by that is that every case requires the same level of treatment around issuing a legal hold, doing document collection, document preservation. Maybe there's different levels that you take that to because of the proportionality. So I from my world, I do think it's better to teach all of our outside counsel a little bit about e-discovery, sort of what I was alluding to before, if for no other reason than to make sure that nothing slips through the cracks, because I've seen lots of companies where there is no communication about the issue. You're in crisis mode. You're focusing on the substantive defense or pursuit of the matter. And oftentimes, the legal hold and all the components that come with it can easily fall by the wayside, or at least not get picked up until later on, by which time it might be too late. And that's a lot of, you know, the reason why I wrote the book that I wrote, because I find that attorneys can be very intimidated. Like I was saying before, most of us did not take computer science or have any kind of technology background. I know I didn't even know what a backup tape looked like before I had this job. And I don't really think that in this day and age, attorneys can reasonably practice law, especially complex commercial litigation, without some understanding of e-discovery.
You know, one of my personal big beefs I'm writing an article about is sort of the lawyer approach to solving all legal problems, in technical areas. Because I think you run into barriers that you just mentioned. You know, we don't have these technical skills naturally ingrained in all of us. And at the heart of e-discovery, it's a technical problem. Do you sort of see networking as an opportunity to pull more of the technology people in to interact with the lawyers? Because when the lawyers do it on their own, I don't see a lot of creativity. That's just sort of...
I couldn't agree with you more, Carl. I mean, the most productive discussions I've ever had were with non-attorneys. Because I totally agree with you. I think that the problems around e-discovery are not really ones for the lawyers to solve. They're ones for IT, perhaps in partnership with attorneys, to solve.
Well, that's maybe a thought for the coming Friends of e-discovery year, so at least in Pittsburgh.
Carl,
go ahead.
This is Dan. I wanted to give you one perspective on online networking that I have found to be very effective.
Good.
I have not found it effective to echo the sentiments of my fellow panelists to engage in lengthy dialogues online. And similar to Her Honor, as a testifying expert, I refrain from posting a lot of opinions or, frankly, even a lot of personal information about myself online, because it just doesn't serve any true purpose for when I get engaged. But what I have found very useful is LinkedIn. And what I like to do is the following. When I see myself traveling, I will go to LinkedIn and find out if anyone lists themselves as being involved with e-discovery in the city that I'm traveling to, and I'll use the mechanisms within LinkedIn to meet that person, which may be an introduction through a common contact, and use that as a way to meet someone new, and usually arrange for a coffee or an in-person hello, just to say that I want to meet someone new in a new market, who has interest in e-discovery that I haven't spoken with before. So it's really an outreach program. I find it to be extremely effective, and I've never had anyone decline a meeting. They may not have liked it after they had it, but they've never declined it.
That's a good point. I've found the same benefits. Sort of wrapping up here in the networking, how do we find more information about networking groups? In Pittsburgh, Judge Conte, if you want to talk about how we, you know, sort of spread the word a little bit, and Pete, you can talk about, you know, as well, since you're the point person at Friends of eDiscovery.
In Pittsburgh, for the judiciary, I generally let the other judges know when the meetings are going to be, encourage them to attend. We try to bring our law clerks with us so when they have the time to come. So it's a very informal method of getting the word out. Also, at other programs that we have on e-discovery, oftentimes the Friends of e-discovery will be mentioned. People will make inquiries, and it's very simple. You just get in touch with Carl, and he'll put you on the master list, and you'll get the invitations.
I also put it up on a website at friendsofediscovery.com, what happened in the previous meetings, and we standardize it on the same day of the month every 3 months so that people can at least block off their calendars. But Pete, how about you know you've got other cities that have these meetings up. How do people find out about it in general?
So for so they would email me, right? I'm easy to find. Peter.Pepperton@Dinsmore.com. For places where we have existing groups going, then we would just add someone to the list. And for new places, it requires a little bit of a human involvement. It's not just put up a flag and people will flock to it. Sometimes people have to be persuaded, cajoled, shown the value proposition of why they should invest the time in walking over, spending the hour and a half, et cetera. So we're always looking for passionate people to drive attendance in new places that look to be in position to benefit from participation in a group like Friends of eDiscovery.
Allison, yourself, for women in eDiscovery or the In Council group that you mentioned?
Sure. Well, women, they both have websites. Women in eDiscovery, all one word, .com is the best place to find out information. And if you're in a city where there is no WIE, WE chapter, you can certainly find out information about starting one. I don't think it's terribly difficult, and you'll have lots of support. The founders of Women in eDiscovery, one of whom is my co-author of our book, they're extremely passionate about this topic. And so they really, technology being a primarily or maybe historically male-dominated field, it's really nice to be able to get together with other women, again, not just attorneys, but in all areas of the law, who are really interested in this and interested in being a mentor and helping you in that way. Corporate eDiscovery Forum also has its own website, and there's information there about joining. Like you were saying before, Carl, it's only available to in-house counsel, which, in certain circumstances is, the more appropriate forum to talk about certain things that might be particular to your company.
And Dan, how about for eDiscovery?
For eDiscovery, we do not have an organized website. The best way to get involved is to reach out to me. I'll put you in touch with the local chapter leader, and they'll get you on the invitation list. The chapters usually meet once a month on the same day of the month, although some chapters shut down during the slow months in the summer, especially down in Houston and in Miami. But if you reach out to me, I'll put you in touch with them, and we welcome your participation.
And then my observation on if your chapter doesn't have a group in the community, if you're passionate about it, from what I've heard from everyone here and my own experiences, it takes a passionate person to sort of run with it and coordinate. But every city of every size has enough people interested in this to then form a nucleus of getting together and helping each other. But you need that passionate person to start it is sort of, I think, the key.
And I also think, especially, again, in the in-house counsel area, for those listeners out there who are in that position, it's also a pretty daunting task to be given the eDiscovery role and not have the foggiest idea where to get started. And so, I know that my colleagues and I are always happy to work with other companies, brainstorm together. And so there's sort of like what I would call ad hoc networking. And I cannot remember a time when any in-house counsel has been, sort of reluctant to engage in that kind of discussion. Because we're all in the same boat. So it's a nice, group to be a part of.
And the other nice thing about networking is we're not going to solve this overnight. So if you miss a meeting, it's not like the field suddenly changed. It's everyone's busy. that's sort of my observation of the mix of people that attend our meetings. But anyway, since we've got four outstanding panelists here, and I've started a new question at the end of ESI Bites, just to sort of time where we're at. We're here December 28th, 2011. What do you see as the big issue out there that has you the most focused in eDiscovery right now? And it doesn't have anything to do with networking. It's just something I like to throw out there at the end And we'll start with you, Judge Conte, and then, you know, work our way around. Allison, Dan, and Pete, you got the hard job. You're last.
Well, I think one of the big issues this coming year is whether there should be new rules created with respect to e-discovery to try to control the costs, or should we have special orders that are entered limiting the scope of e-discovery. These are the kinds of things that the judges are going to be talking about over the next year or two.
Okay. And Allison?
For us, it's really how to make the most effective and best use of technology along the lines of the predictive coding software. How can we be smarter about e-discovery? Those of us in-house at companies who are on the front lines dealing with this, how can we make better use of our limited resources, especially when it comes to document review?
Okay, Dan?
That's a really open question. There are so many emerging issues right now between changing price models, changing perceptions of privacy, rules around preservation. But I think the biggest challenge on the near and medium-term horizon is going to be how do we grapple with the overwhelmingly large pools of data being accumulated through social media and other internet activity that are not in the possession of the custodians or the people about which the data represents. And how do we deal with these large volumes of structured data that are being accumulated on a petabyte basis?
Great. And Pete?
I'm under no obligation to be totally original here, right?
No, you don't have to. Sure, when the person says last can agree with any of the first three.
So I'll agree with all of those, right? It's not hidden to anybody that the Rules Committee is looking at. Do we need some new rules to try to manage the impact that e-discovery is having on the judiciary, on companies all across the country, and access to the courts? It's going to be interesting to see where some of those things come out. We've got some experiments out in model rules and model orders in various courts. So it'll be really interesting to see how those play out. And of course, at Sedona, we're taking a crack at what some of those preservation rules might ought to be. Both on the front end, do we limit scope, and on the back end, do we limit the sanctions? Predictive coding is hot for everybody. It's got great promise to reduce out some of the costs and burdens involved. That coupled with 502 has great promise. It just seems like there's a problem. Can we create a path of defensibility to it? And who wants to go first in that? And I think Dan's spot on with social media is the place where we're going to start keeping a lot of our information and interactions. So no original thoughts. Good sum up, hopefully.
Great. And if I wasn't too obvious, you're just helping me create my next bunch of shows. That's the other reason I asked this question. So anyway, I appreciate having you on the show, each of you, Judge Conte, Allison, Dan, and Pete, you know, for joining us here at ASI Bites. It's always a pleasure to have you and others like you share your knowledge with us and our listeners, and hopefully we'll be able to do some more shows with you later this year. And I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Jurnov, for their continued support of ASI Bites. To the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to esibytes.com with a Y for more or a complete list of our show. You can also remember our show and website phonetically as Easy Bites of ESI information. But however you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bites to learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Shinneman, president and founder of ReviewLess, wishing you a nice day.